Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So Novak Djokovic is a six-time Wimbledon champion and 20-time Grand Slam champion, and has completed three of the four legs of a calendar slam, a position he's never been in before, and he has completed, if you want to look at it this way, three of the five legs of a golden slam. He says he hasn't decided yet whether he will play the Olympics. That's something that we can discuss in due course. I must disclaimer this podcast with the fact that we have all just collectively watched England lose the Euros final on penalties. And if we sound downbeat, it's not because we don't think 20 Grand Slam titles is a marvellous achievement. It's because we've only just stopped crying in time to be able to record this podcast. So you're sort of listening to our very own therapy session.
Yeah, I'm going to treat this as catharsis. Yes, it was not the greatest half an hour we've ever had. But anyway, I'm sufficiently long in the tooth to have seen about four of these now in my lifetime. So, you know.
That doesn't make it better, David.
It kind of does, actually.
Does that mean I'm allowed to be extremely, extremely sad?
Yes. Yeah, it gets easier.
Oh,
does it?
Yeah. Look, I feel all right.
Billie Jean knows where she's needed and has placed herself on Matt's lap.
Mm-hmm.
Good teamwork from Billie Jean King. She is the Gareth Southgate shoulder to Matt's Bukayo Saka right now. Anyway, Novak Djokovic. Let's row back a few hours to when there was hope and things to look forward to, and when it wasn't raining and life wasn't miserable. Hey, Matteo Berrettini has at least had a good evening. Should we look at it like that?
Yeah, he's picked himself up tonight, hasn't he?
Yes.
Good for him.
Right then, Novak Djokovic, 20 Grand Slam titles. As it stands at the moment, if the world stops turning, and Matt looks like he might quite want that to happen, Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal will each have 20 Grand Slam titles, 60 between them. And that is just an incredible thing. But the world isn't going to stop turning, and Novak Djokovic ain't stopping there.
No, there was the sort of the joke that's gone around that. Just imagine if he decided to retire now. And then within about 2 minutes, he the first thing he answered was, what do you feel when somebody says to you, you're all on 20? And he goes, well, we can't stop now. So that's very clear. We knew he'd be as motivated as ever to move on. I mean, in terms of what we saw today, I mean, it kind of went how I think we all thought it would do in terms of being close, but ultimately Djokovic being too good. The big surprise to me was that Berrettini struggled early on, went far behind, looked like he's going to get duffed up in that first set, and then turned it around, and Djokovic allowed him to turn it around. That's the part that I really wasn't expecting at all, but ultimately, yes, I think it played out pretty much as I would have thought, apart from that.
Yeah, it was that 5-2 game in the first set with Berrettini serving at 2-5, and he had to save a set point there. And when he eventually held, it felt to me like he unclenched and was suddenly liberated from, I don't know what it was that was compromising him in those early stages, nerves, I guess. And suddenly he started really attacking the ball and playing the points on his terms and rocking Djokovic with his big power. And he did what he had to do, which was win the first set. Ultimately, it wasn't enough, but if he hadn't won that first set, I don't think he would have had a chance in this match. And with Djokovic racing into an early lead, it really looked like it was, you know, in danger of not being much of a contest. But credit to Berrettini for fighting back in that first set, playing a great tiebreak, winning it. And for a moment there, it really did feel like we had a bit of a match. But Djokovic's response to go up a double break in the second set, just so quickly and efficiently, you know, he was fighting through his own tightness, I felt, for most of the match. I think we got
tournament.
Tournament, yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure we ever saw a completely liberated Djokovic swinging really freely at the ball. Perhaps not until the very final stages of this match, actually. I thought his last few games of this match were some of his best. It was interesting to see how they both managed it. And in the end, it was Djokovic doing what he does, doing enough to win, and he's the best I've ever seen at managing these matches and winning these big moments.
The most Djokovic move of the match was breaking immediately at the start of the second set, wasn't it? It was so kind of, ha, you think you've got a chance here. You think you've seen Matt's stat and you know that you've got to win the first set to have a chance. Well, even then, mate, even then.
And I think that was from 40-15 on Berrettini's serve.
Yeah, yeah. Or even 40-love.
And that, you can't do that. Mm. Not when you've got a serve like Berrettini's got and a forehand and you've got momentum and all that. You just can't do that. And maybe experience will help him so that doesn't happen in the future. It's always difficult to know, because sometimes it can be the other way around, that not having the experience can take away any fear or any question marks. You know, you've got no bad experiences to draw on. But, I mean, I think that the thigh strapping throughout the match made me wonder whether Berrettini was compromised. I don't really remember seeing that the rest of the tournament. But ultimately, I just take away the fact that I don't think Berrettini could have won today, because Djokovic is just better. Overall, he's got everything to diffuse the game of Berrettini.
Yeah, and he wasn't necessarily troubled by it, but he wasn't enjoying the Berrettini slice early on in the match, I don't think, Djokovic. It wasn't sort of a game changer for Berrettini, but it was, you know, causing a bit of a stir, and I felt like Djokovic just sort of figured that out over the course of the match and was using the Berrettini slice to get on top of rallies by the end. And I'm sure part of that was being on top of the scoreline and just generally opening his shoulders a bit. But for me, the feat of this title run is the fact that he never played, I don't think, even close to his best tennis. He never saw that moment where he opened his shoulders and he's just swinging. I didn't watch all of his matches, and in fact, there were one or two that I saw very little of, because they were just so routine and there was so much else going on. But of what I saw, there was none of that completely free hitting. He looked tense and inhibited throughout this tournament, inhibited by desire and hunger for this title. And look, he's had that desire and hunger for a long time. It's defined him, but the calendar slam makes it a now or never situation. If you don't win this one, then that's off. And for the golden slam, that's off forever. you know, it's hard to think that he'll be in this position in 3 years' time, although definitely never say never where any of the big three are concerned. But yeah, he's looked inhibited to me and yet still imperious. And in the words of his coach, Goran Ivanišević, after the match, unbeatable.
Yeah, that's a frightening thought. I think I would put some of it down more to the opponents that he faced, the type of opponents, the attacking nature of Shapovalov and Berrettini, who want to go on the front foot all the time. And I think it's probably a safer play to win the match by not hitting out for Novak Djokovic in that situation. I think it's harder to hit aggressively against that sort of power. And
but I'm not necessarily talking, I agree with you, but I'm not necessarily talking about tactics. I'm just talking about, I mean, physically, his shoulders to me have looked, you know, just tight and
hunched.
Well,
it would make sense, doesn't
throughout.
It?
Absolutely.
It does add up that might be the case. I just feel like there are some players that, Zverev and one or two others, that he might not approach it quite the same way, but probably you're right in that sheer tension gets in the way in terms of how he ends up approaching it. But that's the extraordinariness of his ability, is that he's still able to, it's like it is the ultimate plan B. He has two or three modes that he can just go into in order to win Grand Slam titles.
And in his own words, he's a more complete player now than he ever has been. I mean, he's not saying he's playing better than ever. He's not putting it in those terms. But I think he realizes now that he understands his game better than ever. I think he has more options. You know, he can go into his classic grinding mode from the baseline, or he can be really aggressive from the baseline and dominate with that forehand, or he can do what we saw this tournament, which was not really either of those, but just raise his game when it matters, mix in some variety. I thought he volleyed brilliantly this tournament. He was sort of ghosting in a lot and finishing points at the net. I think
Pat Cash was really won over by his volleying. And this is a classic serve and volleyer, and he said it's amazing what he's achieved with that, because he used to not have a clue.
A decade after employing a volleying coach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's that? That's Todd Martin, Mark Woodford, Boris Becker, Goran Ivanišević, Andre Agassi. I mean, there is not a stone he has left in order to try to improve over the years. And it has paid off. I mean, it might not have always been acute at the time and obvious, but just... And that was what Pat Cash was saying in the commentary, was sometimes it may not happen. He was going in on a wing on a prayer when he was first starting with Boris Becker. But here he is now in 2021, some 7 years later or whatever it is, mid-30s, and he's still fit enough to be able to enjoy the fruits of all that work he put in back then.
And I think what he's done in just how I view tennis is, I think I used to quite flippantly think, you know, the best player is the one whose peak is the highest, you know, whose ceiling is the highest. And Djokovic will certainly have a claim to that. When he's played peak tennis, he's incredible. He can do anything. But there are, you know, Nadal and Federer can do anything as well when they're at their peak. What he has done has made me realise that it's about having the highest floor. You know, it's about how you're playing when you're not quite at your best, and finding ways to win when you can't necessarily see the ball huge and just hit winners all day. And he does that better than anyone. I mean, really. I mean, he
absolutely.
It is incredible what he does. And look, I don't think he was at his floor this tournament. He wasn't playing badly, but he certainly wasn't at his peak. And he creates not much difference between the two. It's incredible. He has very few weaknesses, and you're just left thinking, well, how do you beat the guy? How do you hurt him? And he's just got the answers to all the questions. And, you know, Berrettini has asked him questions, Shapovalov has, and they've come away empty-handed.
Well, I asked that question of Goran, who was brought to the press conference room after the match.
Within minutes.
Again. It happened after the Australian Open win, didn't it? Maybe it happened after the French Open, but I wasn't, certainly wasn't aware of it then. But in pops Goran, so we head along to that press conference, virtually, of course. And I asked him, you know, Goran is just, he's in awe of Djokovic. He's completely in awe of him. He had already come out with some incredible lines. He'd talked about players from the Balkans. He said, we're capable of incredible things. And I know, David, you pointed out that as a Croatian, he had had a thing or two of not so great things to say about Serbians back in his day, but maybe he's matured, I don't know. He certainly feels a Balkan kinship with Djokovic and a mentality of understanding something that not everyone can understand, you know, coming from a war-torn country and all of that. And it's very clear, you know, I think they're extremely different people, and I don't think they're blokes that go to the pub together, but I think Goran is, yeah, in awe of Novak Djokovic, what he is as an athlete and competitor. Anyway, he was just waxing lyrical about Djokovic, so bullish, you know, not downplaying the hype about the Golden Slam, the opposite of downplaying the hype, David Lawing the hype. So I said, look, given the form he's in, and more importantly, the mindset and the confidence that he has at the moment, imagine that you're Goran Ivanišević, the player, at your peak. What do you think going onto the court to face this Djokovic? How would you be convincing yourself that you can win? And he basically said, not possible. He's unbeatable. And I don't think he means he's never going to lose a tennis match again, but I think he means, when it matters, when it's important at the moment, unless Djokovic messes up, which could very well happen,
yeah,
it doesn't really matter what you do or what you tell yourself or who you are, how good the next guy is at the moment, that doesn't matter. And he was asked about whether Djokovic is the GOAT, and he said, yeah, he's the GOAT. And at the end of this year, there'll be no debate about it anymore. He said, look, there'll always be a certain amount of debate because of the element of that discussion that's down to taste. He said, but that's a different kettle of fish. In terms of the numbers, there'll be no debate at the end of this year.
The GOAT is the greatest of all time.
Yes. It was hype-tastic, that press conference.
And I think that's exactly what Novak Djokovic needs and wants. That's why I think that's a big part of why Goran is in his camp. He wants to be told, you're the guy, because he goes on the court with that mentality. And if he's got people around him telling him that, he doesn't want doubt being put in his mind. Just, it's all part of what makes him stronger, I think, on the court. And look, in terms of those records now, I've sort of always felt like there could be a distinction between GOAT and BOAT. If GOAT is greatest and BOAT is best, yeah. Like greatest just feels like such a big term and people have their own interpretation of it a little bit. But best of all time, purely records, it's already Djokovic.
Yes.
I genuinely don't think there's that much of an argument anymore. Currently, it could, look, the picture could change again, but out of those three,
is that based on the weeks at number one?
It's based on he's tied at slams. He's got more weeks at number one.
He owns
the head-to-head against both of them. He's won all the Masters titles. He's held all four slams at once. I mean,
and he's won away from doing it twice.
The only thing he doesn't have is the gold medal.
Yeah.
and a calendar slam, but no one else has got that either.
Yeah, and he did something today.
Absolutely on course for them both.
Yeah,
and he did something today, which was one of the few things he didn't have, which Federer and Nadal had, which was winning Roland Garros and Wimbledon in the same year. That's seen as one of the hardest things to do in tennis because
of that
short
channel
turnaround,
slam.
The channel slam, the different surfaces. He's done that now. And just this year, he is taking on the best that men's tennis currently has to offer. He's beaten Nadal at Roland Garros. He's beaten Medvedev, Tsitsipas and Berrettini in Grand Slam finals, who are this young, up-and-coming generation who are meant to be challenging him. And they are challenging him. He's just fending them off.
Mm. I mean, what's... Okay, Olympic gold medal. I mean, Federer doesn't have that in singles, so that's only Nadal that's got that on him. They've all got Davis Cups.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what else have the other two got? I mean, a Laver Cup?
He's got one of those as well.
Has he?
Yeah. Has he? Yeah, he must do. He played it, and Europe have won it every time.
Have I blocked out
they?
Djokovic playing Laver Cup?
It was awful.
Did he look miserable the whole time? Is that my memory of that?
He didn't seem to particularly enjoy it.
No.
It was a one-time-only thing.
He's got a Laver... Well, case closed. He's got a Laver Cup.
He's got an ATP Cup.
The thing is, what's quite clear is that he does find it difficult to really... be at his best at the tour events that aren't the slams or aren't relevant to the slams, and he's quite open about that, really, isn't he? That's the way he's going to organise himself now on, so he can look. We can still get drawn into thinking, oh, he looks vulnerable. He's lost to Dan Evans on Claire.
Yep,
he's lost to so and so. You know, but you're not alone. But it's all irrelevant, mm-hmm. really, isn't it? Because he is so different at these major tournaments when it matters the world to him.
Well, what do we make, then, of the fact that he seems to have cast doubt on his participation in the Olympics? David, you were very dismissive and said, no, he's going to go.
Well, my immediate thought was, well, I've heard that sort of thing before. Admittedly, after losses, after the French Open loss, he said, I don't even know if I'm going to play the grass. I know, maybe he's trying to downplay it and not have that all around him. Maybe there's the thing with the family that he doesn't want to be away from the family if that's what's required. I don't exactly know where going to Tokyo leaves an athlete with their family.
Your families can't go.
Yeah, I mean, that would be difficult, I think, for him, really.
Maybe it's just bubble fatigue and
the thought of...
But
I think that will be overcome because this is a one-time only thing in his career.
Do you think there's any... I'm somewhat playing devil's advocate here, but do you think there's any feeling on his part that he wouldn't want to jeopardise the calendar slam by going for the golden slam? Because I personally feel very strongly that he's far more vulnerable at the Olympics than at the US Open.
Mm.
Best of three sets, strange environment, no crowds, potential letdown after Wimbledon, mind slightly focused on the US Open. But if the momentum and the spell is slightly broken at the Olympics and he has a feeling of loss and not achieving something rather than being on this incredible roll, does that just dent his chances slightly of the US Open? Does he not want to do anything to risk the calendar slam, is my question.
That was exactly how I was thinking about it. And when I read those quotes that he was divided and 50-50 on whether he was going to go to Tokyo or not. But then I thought, in a really bizarre world, that's how I would think.
Yeah, me too.
But I would be surprised if he thinks like that, because he's in such a mode of confidence right now where he just seems to have belief that he can win anything he sets his mind to. So I would back him to set his mind to both of those goals and achieve them and think, if I win the gold medal in Tokyo, that shouldn't have an effect on my hopes for the calendar slam at the US Open. But perhaps he would think like that, and perhaps nothing is more important than the calendar slam. I think if he could take either, I still think, even though he doesn't have an Olympic gold, I still think he would take the US Open over the Olympic gold.
Yeah. Now, at the start of the year, I think he'd have taken Olympic gold, but now the calendar slam is on.
A calendar slam is such a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, you know how patriotic he is, and we've seen him at the ATP Cup and the Davis Cup. Just imagine
him, the Laver Cup.
Imagine him with a gold medal around his neck. I mean, imagine what that scene would be like.
Remember the last Olympics, he left the court in tears.
Yeah, that was seriously moving at the time, him against Del Potro, wasn't it? But, yeah, I think he's going to go, personally. Mm. It's my gut feeling. I'd be surprised if he didn't play the Olympics. I'd be surprised if he didn't win the Olympics. But he's certainly more vulnerable there than he is at the US Open for all the reasons you've identified, the three set versus the five set. And I think he's likely to go into the US Open as one of the biggest favourites that tournament has ever known. I think he will end up being as much of a favourite as Federer was in the mid to late 2000s. And Steffi Graf in her era, Serena Williams when she was at her absolute most dominant.
Do you think more of a favourite at the US Open than he was at this Wimbledon? He felt like such a big favourite to me at this Wimbledon because of his experience on grass. I think it's easy to overlook the fact he's really turned Wimbledon into his slam. Five of the last seven he's won, six overall. The field was weakened.
He's mastered it, hasn't he?
With Nadal not
actually,
being
and the US Open, he hasn't won so many times.
Three times.
No, he's won it three times.
But it's
doesn't feel like that for some reason.
It's his third best slam.
Yeah, yeah. I just feel like his locker room aura right now. The fact that Shapovalov threw what he threw at him, and then Berrettini, who's won Queens and got to the final and handled everybody else pretty comfortably, they must just look at him and think, well, how can I beat this guy?
And Goran will tell them, you can't. And that is the end of
the
debate.
By the way, just something you were saying when you were talking about Goran being somebody he would want in his corner because he builds him up and makes him feel the way he does, and I think that's absolutely right. What an interesting contrast that is to Ash Barty, who we were talking about last night, with her mindset coach, whose whole mission statement, his whole approach to everything, is to get them to lean into their vulnerabilities and not to have to be told that they are the best, but to be accepting of things that worry them and kind of diffuse them as they go along. It's just such an interesting contrast, and yet here they are, both with the titles.
Can I tell you another interesting contrast that you might not like? I've just seen a lovely smiling picture of Matteo Berrettini being interviewed at Wembley after the Euros final. Mm-mm. Is that...
No.
No.
I'd like to say I'm delighted, but go away, Matteo.
But we don't want Berrettini to be sad as well as us.
No, just go and be happy somewhere quietly on your own.
Okay, I've misjudged that one, folks.
No, I'm very happy for him. He's a lovely bloke, but just licking the wounds.
Mm. Berrettini, then. Does he have the game to win Grand Slams? Or does he nearly have the game to win Grand Slams? Or does he need to wait for people to stop playing before he will ever have the game
to win
Grand
Slams? It's not many people, is it? It's Novak Djokovic. I don't think he needs to wait for anybody else. And okay. And actually, because I think he's right up there right now.
And then
now
that applies to everybody. So is he now into the best of the rest category?
Pretty much. He's top four, five.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see him on hard courts again. I mean, he obviously had his Australian Open cut short, didn't he, with that injury that he sustained. But he was playing brilliantly at the start of the year and looking the business. He's obviously reached the US Open semi-final, so I'm confident he can do it on hard courts. But I do think that does bring more players into the equation. It brings Rublev, Medvedev, Tsitsipas, right back probably alongside him.
He's ahead of Rublev for me.
Yeah, I would say he is. But, I mean, Rublev has done a lot of winning on hard courts. He just needs to step it up at the slams. And I have the same question marks as you about whether he can do that. I probably would put Berrettini ahead. But I just think he's not quite singled himself out on grass because there's Novak Djokovic. But he's elevated himself ahead of the chasing pack on grass, certainly, you know, this season, but also what he did in 2019 was impressive. He's a real force on grass and will be, I think, for some years to come.
In mixes.
Yeah, although the mix does feel like one bloke.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
And it sorry to bring this back to Djokovic as we just got on to Berrettini, but I can't get over the fact that 3 years ago, after the Australian Open in 2018, Roger Federer had 20 slams, Rafael Nadal had 16, Novak Djokovic had 12.
Oh my goodness.
And was coming off an elbow surgery relatively recently that he'd had. There were real doubts about whether he would get back to where he was. He's won 8 slams since then, and I think it's possible, look, who knows, that laying out of the last 3 years is an indication that this can change quickly and dramatically. But right now, it feels like we might be looking back and thinking, remember when it was close? Remember when there was a race?
Mm. Well, he was asked in the press conference today by Rob Moore of the Sun. No, actually, it was Goran that was asked in the press conference. Yes. Can he win 30? Obviously, going for the Sun headline of 30 slams, it's on. but Goran didn't say no.
it's a bit. I remember when Federer won his last Wimbledon, and my question to him was, is it possible to win this at 40? And that was about 4 years ago. and he kind of said, well, if you stay healthy, you know, it's kind of like that. But actually 25 is another target.
That's only just over a year's worth.
It is another target he could end up looking for, because I think the problem will come when he runs out of targets and points.
Yeah.
Because we've seen that hurt him.
It will be very interesting how much of a target he sees Margaret Court's record as, because it's not something he's ever asked about. He is not somebody that talks. He's not one of the male players that talks about the women's game very much. He's never explicitly dismissed equal prize money, but some potentially slightly sketchy comments in the past. You know, it's not necessarily something that I automatically think that he would think of as a target, but if he starts getting asked about it, who knows? I'm very interested in how much of a feature that will become.
I think he'd be able to find a place in his consciousness to.
But
to
it's interesting that we don't ever ask about it.
It's not next in line. I think that's the truth is, it's about what's next, really, in terms of target, and that's why I think for a while we kept with Serena talking about Steffi Graf's record, and Margaret Court didn't really get mentioned until Steffi Graf was overtaken, really.
Yeah, I struggle to see him putting it out there as an objective and say, I want to beat Serena and I want to beat Margaret Court. I don't think he would be the guy to make that comparison with the women's game. I just don't see it, but he might have it as the next target generally within himself.
Wouldn't it also be a bit crass if you did say that was a goal of yours to go and beat the best women player? I don't know. Is that?
I don't know. I think it would be tremendously respectful.
Yeah, and saying I want
that's the record
most
I
ever
want
male female tennis player. I want to be it. I mean, it is interesting how, you know, we're now at this situation where Federer, Nadal, Djokovic are all on 20 and how linked they are as players. I do find it interesting how they've all, you know, that they've not been neck and neck It's not been a race that's been really sort of neck and neck the whole way. I think it's interesting. Federer has so often talked about Pete Sampras's record as his target, and he's obviously extended it beyond that. Nadal has never really bought into the idea, certainly outwardly, of being involved in a race. He's just accumulating as many Grand Slams as he can and doing his thing. Whereas Djokovic has had Nadal and Federer as his target. He broke into that group, and he has been pushed by them. He has been improved by them. He is the player he is now because of them, and he has ultimately joined them now and looks set to go beyond them. And I just, you know, maybe it's, I mean, it feels extraordinary that the third guy to come along could end up with the most, but maybe that's the natural course of events, you know, people pushing each other so much, and he's been pushed more than anyone.
By the way, did you notice that they both sent him tweets tonight?
Yes. Mm. Yes. Roger Federer's tweet was much more succinct than his congratulatory tweet for Nadal reaching 20, I did notice.
Which was written in notes.
Which was with notes and an accompanying picture.
It was a bit more brusque. It was it was sincere but businesslike.
Yes.
Today.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I've just seen a selfie video of Berrettini and Tomljanovic at the football.
No,
which...
not ready for it.
No, I'll never be ready for it. I've shut down Twitter on my phone.
We've done quite a good job of me forgetting about that for about 4 minutes.
I was pleased that he wasn't in a pit of despair, but there is a limit to how happy I'm prepared to be that Berrettini isn't miserable. And he's seemingly, in that split second of that video I saw, far too happy.
We're more miserable than him right now.
Yeah.
All right?
Oh, for definite. What else happened today? Neil Skubsky and Desiree Kravchik won the mixed doubles title 6-2, 7-6. Didn't see much of that. Was watching hopeful football build up, but it happened. Well done, Neil Skubsky and Desiree Kravchik.
Beat Joe Salisbury and
Harriet Dart. Brilliant run for them. Of course, Joe Salisbury won the mixed at the French Open, didn't he?
So Neil Skubsky and his partner Desiree Kravchik so nearly went out in both the previous two matches. So that's a good show. You know, just hang around, you might win the thing.
Yeah, great run for them. In the junior finals, which were played on number one court today, Samir Banerjee, who you saw yesterday, David, and were rather taken by, he beat Viktor Lilov in the All-American final, 7-5, 6-3. So remember the name, Samir Banerjee.
I didn't get to see that match because it was the same time as the men's singles final, but I'm really chuffed to hear that because he was exciting. And it was Massetti, wasn't it, that you saw in the Australian Open 2 or 3 years ago? And I do wish that I saw more of the junior competitions at these slams and then tried to keep a track of them, because that was great, watching these two young lads go head to head like that and to see the talent he'd got. And to, well, yeah, I will keep tabs on him.
Will he be a Federer or will he be a Berankis? That's the big question.
He plays more like Federer, I would say, of the two.
In the girls' final, Ana Mintegui del Olmo of Spain.
And more specifically...
Glasses wearer,
and she's from Gipuzkoa, which is where my grandma was from.
Oh!
One of the Basque provinces. And more specifically than that, she's from Idiazabal, which is also a cheese.
Oh, hello.
So, one...
A hard cheese?
Yes.
I always do this to you. I ask you for supplementary information on really niche things. She beat Natasha Mariana Shunk in the girls' final today. Came from a set down 2-6, 6-4, 6-1. So remember the name, Ana Mintegui del Olmo. Mm.
And I believe she's the first Spanish junior champion at Wimbledon.
Oh, wow. Mm. Mm. Great fact. Dida de Groot won today the women's wheelchair singles title. She beat Gothatso Montagne in the final 6-2, 6-2. I'll say it again, Dida de Groot, because I'm convinced I'm the only person in tennis saying that correctly, other than the Dutch. Joaquin Gerard of Belgium won the men's wheelchair singles title. He beat Gordon Reid 6-2, 7-6 in the final. And now that I've gone down this road, I'll tell you who won the junior doubles title. It titles plural, in fact. Oh dear, I've gone down a rabbit hole here. It was Kristina Dmytryk of Belarus and her partner Diana Schneider of Russia. They won the girls' doubles title. And the boys' doubles title was won by Idas Butvilas of Lithuania. You're on the edge of your seat here, aren't you? Mm-hmm. And his Spanish partner, Alejandro Manzanera Pertusa.
Great. I mean, it's very important that we read out these names and remember that we've read them out in case they do a thing in the future.
Yeah, when one of these is the greatest of all time in 20 years, we will be able to clip this.
We'll have a record.
Yeah,
and remember when we couldn't say Butvilas' name? God, those were the days.
Exactly. It's like when you go back to an old Simon Mayo show on Five Live from 25 years ago and they're reading out URLs on a screen and they're spelling them out.
So those are the names to remember for the future, or possibly to forget. We'll keep you posted. And that was Wimbledon 2021. I know we're in a state of despair right now.
I feel a bit better.
As always, the podcast has helped. Mm.
Yeah, so thank you,
I
listeners.
As you're listening right now, you should do a little round of applause for Matt for doing this podcast, because 45 minutes ago was not a good time.
They put a song on a montage and it didn't go so well.
It was Songbird by Fleetwood Mac. It was an attack.
Yeah.
They didn't need to do that.
And it ended with an Italian shouting, "It's coming to Rome," into a camera.
Yes.
It was horrifying. Anyway, it was a good Wimbledon, wasn't it?
It really was. And it was great to be recording the podcast with you both in person.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a joy. And we shouldn't let the horror of this evening trash that, although it already has.
I was worried about Monday being a real thud. the thuds happened.
quite looking forward to Monday now.
Yeah, bring on Monday.
Yeah, get me out of here as quickly as possible. It has been a joy. It has been a joy. It is...
It is Monday.
It's a shame.
Oh, it is.
To end on such a bum note. But half the people listening don't give two hoots about football. In tennis terms and in podcasting terms, it has been a treat and a joy and a privilege. So thank you very much to you both, to Pam Shriver, to Billie Jean King and Alana for popping round.
Just part of our extended team.
To our mascots, Jesus. This is the big story. We got a win today.
I can't believe it took so long.
On the last day of the tournament.
Did it take you off the bottom of the table?
No. No. That wasn't the game, though, David. Just getting a win was the game.
Consolation.
Mm. Who finished top of our French Open? French Open. I regressed then because I finished top of the French Open predictions. I was trying to relive French Open predictions. Who finished top of the Wimbledon predictions?
Top was Keturah. Congratulations.
Very well done,
Keturah.
David saw her yesterday.
Yes, I did. She was wearing a tennis relived T-shirt.
Ah, good on you, Keturah. Very good predicting.
Very good indeed. She got a lot right.
David did a respectable job for Rogue. Matt, the same for Scousel Mousel.
David was second.
Oh, automatic promotion.
Yes. I'm in the playoffs with... Well, you're in the playoffs. There's only six of us in the competition. So I'm in the playoffs with Catherine, Daryl and James. Thanks to them for taking us on.
Billie Jean is sponsored, as always, by Billie Jean King. She's fast asleep. But she stayed with us because she knows we need her support and comfort right now. Mocha has been our absolutely lovely Wimbledon mascot for the fortnight. Hello, Mocha. Thanks for being a cutie. Thank you to Dawn for putting you forward. Thank you to Chris Albert Lee for being our executive producer and general top bloke. And Matt, our final Wimbledon shout-outs for 2021 are for...
Hector Lisboa.
Oh.
Fantastic name. I don't know any Hectors.
Hector Nunes? Is that a footballer?
Oh.
There's Michael Hector who plays for Fulham. He's rubbish.
There's a Hector in Breaking Bad, isn't there?
I have no idea.
But Lisboa is...
Lisboa is Portuguese for Lisbon.
For Lisbon. Oh. Yeah.
And there was a boxer called Hector Camacho. I've just
Hector
remembered.
Bellerin.
Hector Bellerin.
Correct. There we go.
Shout.
Right, Hector, thanks very much for your support.
We also have Emily Ganko.
Oh.
Right, Emily.
Hello, Emily. I like the name Emily very much. And that name doesn't remind me of any footballers, which is pleasing.
This one might.
Oh, no.
Vicente Sala.
Oh, God. An Italian name with a footballer's surname.
Who's up front for Liverpool.
Yes. Mm. I worry that Vicente is Italian. He doesn't deserve this additional joy.
Normally,
but
that
anyway,
would be magnificent.
Just in case Vicente is not Italian, hello and thank you.
Yes, indeed.
And if he is, well, he's had a good evening anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You've had your fill. It honestly has been a joy. It really has. Thank you for coming on our Wimbledon journey. Sorry if we have sounded slightly dejected tonight. We've done our best job not to. And honestly, the podcast, well, I speak for myself, but I speak for Matt and David as well when I say the podcast has helped somewhat in elevating our somewhat depressed mood. But yeah, it has been a treat. We are going to have a week off, but we'll be back with more podcasts next week. We've got listener questions specials. Hey, the Olympics ain't far away, and nor is the US Open after that. So don't you worry, there are plenty of tennis podcasts to come. And just to remind you that we crowdfund for this podcast every December. And if you'd like a reminder for how you can support us at the end of the year to continue for 2022, then... we can supply you with that reminder. The link will be in our show notes. But for now, from Wimbledon 2021, It's a wrap. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.